a culture war going on in this country, we can no longer remain silent on the issues that affect us all. Decisions we make now will determine our future. But how do we engage with the culture in a way that honors Jesus? How do we rise above the noise to know what is right and what is true? It's time to bring God back into the conversation. It's time to reconnect. Here's Carmen.
Welcome, friends. I'm Carmen LaBurge, and this is The Reconnect, where we're putting God in His place, back where He belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. So how do we do that? How do we enter into the conversations of the day as the very ambassadors of Jesus Christ? How do we speak the mind of Christ in a way that honors Him? Let's face it, people don't need just another piece of our mind. They need the very piece of the mind of Christ, and I think you are just the person to give it to them. So I invite you to connect with us online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can always let me know what you're thinking about on Twitter. I'm at Carmen LaBurge. And trending on Twitter today, I just have to say I am pretty excited that the Evangelicals for Life conference, which just kicked off in Washington, D.C. today, their hashtag is EFL 2017, and EFL 2017 is currently, right now, at this minute, trending on Twitter. And for those of you that are not in the Twitter universe, that means that there's a lot of folks out there who are actively engaging on social media on this specific subject. And we're celebrating that because Evangelicals for Life is lifting awareness about life issues during this week of the March for Life. And here to talk with us today about life and life issues and the pro-life movement in America is Erin Brownback. Erin has been with us before. She's a marketing and communications consultant. She helps conservatives and pro-life individuals learn to speak in such a way that we can actually move the needle on the pro-life issue. She's the co-founder and leader of the Philadelphia chapter of Concerned Women for America, the former director of communications for the Alliance Defending Freedom. And you can follow Erin on Twitter at E. Brownback. Erin, welcome back to The Reconnect.
Carmen, it's great to be here.
So this is a little bit more celebratory view than pro-lifers maybe have had during the March for Life week in the past. So just give us a sense from your perspective of where the pro-life movement is and what's happening in and around D.C. related to it.
Absolutely. Carmen, you know, I remember at the 40th year, the 40th remembrance of Roe v. Wade, and how it sort of felt like Israelites who had been wandering through the wilderness for 40 years. And we have worked in the pro-life movement to get where we are, to have a unified message and to build a strategy to turn the culture toward life. And here we are doing just that. And we're seeing it all around us. The Evangelicals for Life conference is going on for 3 days at the JW Marriott. There's all sorts of activities going on at the Renaissance Hotel. I just came from the Law of Life Summit. And it's just really one after another group getting together and thinking together and collaborating on how we will continue to push the ball across the finish line of turning this culture toward life.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about some signs and evidences that the culture has moved pretty significantly on this issue, that hasn't just happened by accident. That hasn't just happened without a lot of concerted effort. So you talk about a unified message. You talk about a strategy to actually turn the culture toward life. Let's just talk for a moment about what that looks like and what that means. What does it mean to have a message that actually resonates with the culture and helps people understand that life maybe starts before birth and that life is more than maybe what they have thought it was in the past?
So one of the things that has helped with that tremendously is just the medical advancements. It used to be a common message of those who advocated for abortion as an acceptable response to, you know, being pregnant with a prenatal child. It used to be that this isn't a life, right? We've all heard that message. You've heard it. I've heard it. Medical advancement has just shown that's no longer a relevant or intelligent message to use anymore. So that's one side of things. Another aspect of messaging and having a unified message is when you are moving a movement forward, one of the things that helps people to understand is to have a very clear character. And those characters fall into the categories of victim, villain, and heroes. And we have really worked in the pro-life movement to make an effort to be unified on how we communicate about victims, villains, and heroes. You know, at first it was just babies are the victims. But we have moved, and we have seen 86% of women who have an abortion say that they didn't feel like they had any other choice. And many of them are pressured into it. Many women want to have a relationship with their child, but they're being pressed by all sorts of from all sorts of directions into having an abortion that they don't want. We've also seen Planned Parenthood putting millions and millions and millions of dollars into politics. You know, our tax money is going through to keep them open, and they're putting millions of dollars into politics to try to advance the abortion message. And so there's been some really clear victims and some really clear villains. And, you know, the listeners to your show, they have the opportunity to be the heroes in this story as they connect with the people in their lives and they carry the message of life forward with them.
Oh, I love that. I love the opportunity to become a hero. I think that this might be breaking news for most folks. I understand that Vice President Mike Pence is going to actually speak at the March for Life. Is that something that you are aware of, or is that breaking news to you as well?
I just learned of it about an hour ago. Troy Newman, the head of Operation Rescue, told me that he was going to be there. And as you know, Kellyanne Conway is going to be speaking, and she's got a strong faith and strong pro-life position. And President Trump, just in his very first interview as president, talked about the March for Life, talked about the enormous crowd of pro-life people, challenged the media and said, you know, we're aware that you have not covered the size. I mean, I've heard 400,000 at times I've been here in the past, just huge numbers of our nation showing up just here in D.C. Last week, I was in, this past weekend, I was in San Francisco, which, as you know, is not the most conservative city in the country. And they had 80,000 people come out and march in their Walk for Life this past weekend. So it's just across the country, people are just turning out in droves to say, we care about every citizen in society, including the prenatal child.
So I hear you saying in that, Erin, that folks don't actually have to be in Washington, D.C. tomorrow if they want to participate in a March for Life or a Walk for Life. They've actually been taking place all across the country for about a week now, and I think that some of them extend over the weekend as well. So we would encourage folks, no matter where you live, you can find a Walk for Life or a March for Life in your own town or city, or you know what? You can get out and start one. One person with a sign is actually the beginning of a movement. So I do want to ask you, it's very significant that both Vice President Mike Pence and the president's very close advisor, Kellyanne Conway, are going to be speaking at the march, because I'm pretty sure that's unprecedented in the history of the March for Life.
It is. These are the highest ranking officials that we have ever had.
So I just think that, you know, I just want to say to folks, I think that signals, that's a very positive signal for the brand new administration to be sending to those of us who are pro-life out here across the country. Let's talk about the movement to defund Planned Parenthood, because, you know, I appreciated that you talked about the victims and you talked about the heroes. And I know you well enough to know that, you know, we don't really want to put our finger on a villain. But I think that if there is a sort of unified understanding of who the villain is, for a lot of folks, the villain is personified by somebody as horrible as Gosnell. and organizationally and in our minds, it is an organization that advocates for abortion as the choice, as the choice that women ought to be making. And so for us, that's Planned Parenthood. So talk with us about the movement, the effort to defund Planned Parenthood, and whether or not you see that gaining traction.
Yeah, so we've, like you said, we've grown up in a society where it's not polite to point fingers. But I think it's easy for us to all agree, no matter what position you take, that anyone who is pressuring a woman into aborting a child that she loves and wants to carry and that she either wants to parent or make a life plan for that includes adoption, anyone who is pressuring a woman into that is a villain. And the thing about Planned Parenthood is that 50% of their generated revenues come from abortion. And like any organization, nonprofit or otherwise, they close their doors if they do not bring in enough money. So they have a very vested interest in making sure that a woman chooses to abort a child. Live Action just did a series of videos exposing that I think it's 5% of all the Planned Parenthoods, or maybe it's 5 Planned Parenthood locations out of 660, whatever it is, it's very tiny. Almost no Planned Parenthood facilities provide prenatal care. Think about that. If your name is Planned Parenthood and you're about supposedly helping people to prepare for parenthood, wouldn't you think prenatal care would be essential? So we've got an organization that did not used to get the taxpayer money that it does now. We now give them $500 million a year in our taxes, and they have a vested interest in creating a cycle where they do sex education that promotes risky behavior. They keep their overhead costs low by keeping the standards at their facilities low, putting women in danger, and they promote abortion because it brings in the most money. And that is a problem. That is a villain, and that is why we've advocated for our tax dollars to be redirected to the 13,540 community health centers that do more holistic care, you know, for men and women and children and prenatal children. So that's what we see coming in the coming weeks and months, and we're very hopeful for the direction that that's taking in this new administration.
So, Erin, you've used a couple of words. Let me remind people that I'm talking with Erin Brownback. You can follow her on Twitter at E Brownback. Erin, let me lift up a couple of words that you have used that I'm wondering if they are a part of the language that you are trying to teach us. I suspect that maybe at least one of them is. So I heard you use the term prenatal child. I'm not sure I've ever heard that, or at least my ears have not been piqued to that yet. So we are not calling that preborn person a fetus. We are calling them a prenatal child. Do I have that language correct?
You know, Carmen, that's what I use. That's what I encourage others to use. It's not something that I was taught. It's something that in my own research I have found resonates well. And like you said, I work on a long-term messaging plan for the pro-family movement, which covers everything from gender and marriage and sex and life and parenting, that whole spectrum. And I'm looking at how do we position the message of the goodness of God's design for the family into our society in a long-term way to not win the culture war, but to win the culture. How do we, over the next 20 to 30 years, have the right messages coming through entertainment, coming through the church, coming through education and the courts and so on, so that we are all in alignment that the whole and healthy family is ideal for society. And part of that is by recognizing the humanity of the prenatal child. Now, someone may use the word fetus, and just so everybody knows, fetus is Latin for little one. It's not a derogatory word. It's just been used by those who would promote abortion to try to take humanity away. We obviously never have, fetus showers, right? We have baby showers. When we want to recognize the humanity, we do. But when people are trying to cover that up so that they can justify ending that life, then they try to use a word that sounds a little less human.
Mm. All right, and the other thing that I think popped out at me. Let's see, because I know I wrote it down in terms of language. Well, now I can't put my finger on it. I should have kept it right in front of me. Oh, I know what it was. I used the phrase defund Planned Parenthood, and you reframed that as we really need to be calling for the redirection of those funds to what you described as community health centers or community health clinics.
Yeah.
I think that we might lack a really robust understanding of just how widespread family clinics are, these community health clinics, these family clinics that are not related to Planned Parenthood, that there really is this vast network of them across the country, and that the taxpayer funding that Planned Parenthood is giving could be effectively shifted. So we're not just talking about not funding Planned Parenthood clinics. We're actually talking about redirecting that money to more effective outlets. So can you speak to that?
Sure, yeah. So these health clinics that I'm talking about, we got the list of them from the federal government's Health and Human Services website. And they there's a couple of different kinds. There's rural clinics. So they fall into a couple of categories. But there comes out to about 13,500 of them. They are spread in all sorts of areas. Like I said, some rural, which is very uncommon for Planned Parenthood to be in any kind of rural area. They tend to be particularly in areas that have a high concentration of minorities and a high concentration of people who are in poverty. And that seems to be sort of an easy sell for them to promote abortion in those communities. But we do have a vast network of federally qualified health clinics that get little, sometimes no funding. And, you know, Planned Parenthood should not have a stranglehold on $500 million taxpayer dollars a year. That doesn't belong to them. We give our tax dollars to the groups that we think are most fit to benefit society. And obviously, with all the controversy that's around them, they are not the most fit to benefit society. There are others that are far more qualified.
So I think that's extremely helpful information for people to have, and so appreciate your willingness to share that with us today. Erin, we are excited that you are at the March for Life. We thank you for your ongoing work. Tell us in the next 24 hours, related to the March for Life, what kinds of things are you going to be participating in D.C.? Just give us for those of us who aren't there this week, it's kind of exciting and fun to be a fly on the wall walking around with somebody else. So what are you going to be doing?
It's great. If you haven't ever come, you need to get here. Make it a pilgrimage in your life. And by all means, go to the walks and the marches in your area. I actually will be at the Democrats for Life breakfast tomorrow. I've gotten to work with them a little bit on their messaging, which has been an honor. I will go to the march. I'll be at Alliance Defending Freedom's open house. I will be at the Rose Dinner. I will get to speak. I'll have the honor of speaking at the Students for Life conference this weekend. Speaking about the health centers, if you go to my website, erinbrownback.com, you can follow me there and get more information. And Students for Life, I worked with them on a video that's on my website under resources. It's the Lancaster video, and it says, what happens if Planned Parenthood's money gets redirected to better health centers? And it'll give you something you can share with your friends if you're looking for something really encapsulated. You can also follow me on Facebook. You can see what I'm up to this weekend, and I would love to have you participate with me that way.
That's fantastic. Erin, thank you so much as always, and we will we'll follow you on Twitter at @ebrownback. We'll follow you on Facebook. Maybe you could do a little Facebook Live shout-out to us, and we'll keep an eye out for you on your website as well at erinbrownback.com. Erin, thanks so much.
Thanks, Carmen.
All right, friends, tomorrow during the march, we are actually going to be talking to people who are there. So if you are a person who is going to be participating either in the March for Life in Washington, D.C., or you're participating in a walk or a march in your own area, we're going to have the phone lines open tomorrow during the show just for folks to call in and share with us what their experience is, what they're seeing, who they're with, those kinds of things, and in particular, why you march. You know, like, why are you marching? What are you doing? What's that all about? And so you might want to take down the number today. It's 877-655-6755. We look forward to talking with those who are participating in the March for Life tomorrow in D.C. and around the country at other marches as well. All right, so I already mentioned to you that Evangelicals for Life 2017, EFL 2017, is trending on Twitter. But let me remind you that if you can't get to D.C. and you would like to access some of these amazing speakers and this content that is being offered through Evangelicals for Life today and tomorrow, you can log on to a website that's just evangelicals.life. That's evangelicals.life. And they're actually streaming those events, streaming those teaching sessions, streaming those discussions. And so I would encourage you to do that. That's how I'm participating this year. I had the privilege of being there last year, but you know, we can't be everywhere all the time. We got to be where we got to be. And so this makes it possible for us to be present and participating, even though we can't get there physically. So evangelicals.life. Okay, so I can't even hardly believe that a week from yesterday is going to be February the 1st. So I'm taking a deep breath about that because my book manuscript is due to the publisher on February the 1st. So your prayers related to that are certainly appreciated. But the other thing that starts on February the 1st is the Kindness Challenge. And I want to actually invite you to take the Kindness Challenge with me. I'm going to be taking the Kindness Challenge. It's a 30-day challenge. And we're going to talk about not just, you know, speaking the truth, but we're going to probably highlight the in love part of that. Like, it's one thing to speak the truth. It's another thing to speak the truth in love. It's one thing to, you know, for you and I to engage the culture. It's another thing for us to do so in a way that honors Jesus. So the Kindness Challenge is aligned with exactly that way of thinking. There's a lot of division and a lot of criticism in the world, in the context of our public conversations. So what would it look like for us to lead with kindness? That's basically the question of the Kindness Challenge. And so that's what we're going to be engaged in starting on February the 1st. And here's how you can join me in the Kindness Challenge. You can go to reconnectwithcarmen.com. You can click on join the Kindness Challenge. It's a huge banner right now. You can't miss it. And there you like sign up for this daily email. And basically we're going to send out a daily encouragement and ideas for the 30 days of how you can just give people kindness for 30 days. And so you might just pick one person that you are going to focus on giving kindness to for 1 month. I actually, just a few minutes ago, picked my person because I failed that person in kindness. And so I've just already decided that's now my person, and I'm going to focus on that person during the Kindness Challenge for 30 days starting February the 1st. I don't know. I might go ahead and start early and seek to be kind for the next 7 days as well. So this is actually based on some real social research by Shanti Feldham, and she's going to be on the show next week to talk with us about her research and the Kindness Challenge. But I want you to go ahead and get signed up in advance. So you go to reconnectwithcarmen.com, and you can sign up to join me in the Kindness Challenge. Now, right after the break, we are going to be talking about the headlines of the day. And I don't know about you, but they are rolling in constantly. So if you have been wondering, is Carmen going to talk about the Dow hitting 20,000? Is she going to talk about immigration and refugees and the wall and the religious response to it? Yes. Is she going to talk about, what else am I talking about? I got some other things on the agenda as well. Is she going to talk about the fact that this is the day, I think it was 11 years ago, that Condoleezza Rice actually became the Secretary of State. I'm going to talk about all kinds of things and the doomsday clock. So don't go anywhere. Stick with me through the break, and we're going to be talking about the headlines of the day. This is The Reconnect, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to The Reconnect with your host, Carmen LaBerge. Now, back to Carmen.
Hey, friends, I am Carmen LaBerge, and this is The Reconnect, where we're putting God in his place, back where he belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. And so today, in terms of we got to be talking about what people are talking about, that means we're talking about what the president is doing and what the president has done and how people are responding to that. So how function as the ambassadors of the kingdom of God amidst of the kingdoms of this world when our particular kingdom that we're a part of, the United States of America, man, is so up in arms and divided over issues like refugees and immigration and a wall across our southern border. So in case there was any confusion, there are some very clear lines being drawn, not in the sand, but like, you know, I can't believe you did that outrage. And then other people saying, you know, that's what he said he was going to do. And he did it. And now it's done. And let's go. We like action. We're action oriented people. It's an action oriented nation. We voted for the guy who promised action. And now, you know, we're at least from him. There's this perception that people are they're getting some movement on some things that there hasn't been movement on in some period of time. Now, Rasmussen, which is a national tracking poll, and they actually do a daily presidential tracking poll. I know that it's hard to believe that anyone is tracking things every single day, but Rasmussen does a daily presidential tracking poll. And today's Rasmussen poll shows that 59% of likely U.S. voters approve of the president's job performance. So he showed up to work on Monday. People liked that. People like probably that he hasn't gone to play golf yet, and it's already Thursday. People like that he's doing stuff. People like that he's doing what he said he would do. People like that he is actually making good on the promises of the campaign trail. So not everybody, however, likes everything that he's doing. This should not be a shock nor a surprise to us. There's lots of people. If 59% of the people approve of his job performance, then that means that 41% of the people don't. So 41% of the people can make a lot of noise. I'm just letting you know right now, it's going to be a noisy 4 years. It's going to be noisy. And there's going to be noise on both sides, and you're going to find yourself conflicted as a Christian on certain issues. I think that today's issues of immigration and refugees, in particular, maybe not so much the wall, but immigration and refugees, I think those are issues over which Christians are deeply conflicted. Now, I actually can bring you some evidence to point to that internal conflict among the household of faith. The Trump administration and faith communities find themselves on, different places on the subject of immigrants and refugees. Now, why is that? Well, that's because from a faith perspective, we recognize that every person in all the world is made in the image of God. And yes, we also recognize, because we understand the concept of sin and the reality of it, that everybody is totally depraved, 100%, and they need Jesus. And so it doesn't surprise us that the non-Jesus people aren't behaving like Jesus people, right? So what I hear the government saying, remember, the government's role is different than the role of the ambassador of the kingdom of heaven, right? I am an ambassador of the kingdom of heaven in the midst of the kingdoms of this world. So I can declare the reality that every human being is made in the image of God, and that everyone deserves a flourishing life, the full life that Christ died to give them. Absolutely. Governments have a different role and a different responsibility, and part of the role of government is keeping their citizenry safe, protecting their own borders, determining who comes in. And so the role that government is seeking to play is very much a role of public safety. And the Christian's role is to declare that, safe or not, I think people deserve the opportunity at life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. And so it doesn't surprise me that this conflict is taking place. It also doesn't surprise me that there are Christians very vociferously speaking their piece on all sides of these issues. Now, I have a little concern to raise with you about that, because I think that it makes Christ look divided to the world. So the fact that there are Christians both very, very publicly supporting the Trump administration in terms of the executive orders related to immigration and refugees. And there are lots of Christians voicing opposition, very strong opposition to those same executive orders. I think the challenge that presents in the culture is that it makes it look like Christ is a schizophrenic. Right? Because if Christians are supposed to be representing Jesus Christ in the world and Christians can't get together on these issues, Christians aren't speaking with one mind and one voice on these issues, then the culture is led to believe that Jesus himself is divided on the subject. And that's just not true. That's just not true. So just because Christians are divided on something does not actually mean that the subject itself is a divided issue in the mind of Christ. It's just that the church has not fully or rightly discerned the mind of Christ on the matters that are before us. Now, that is nothing new. That is nothing new, right? You can look all the way back to the 11th chapter of the book of Acts. And so you are talking here about super duper early in the life of the Christian church. But before we look back to see the evidence that there has long been division in the church, and before we look back and see how division in the church is supposed to be resolved, let's just talk about some of the reactions and responses that the Trump administration is getting from leaders in the faith community. First of all, there are some folks who have come out in strong support of the position of the president, in strong support of what he's saying. Franklin Graham, you know, probably for some of us the most recognizable name in the group. But for those of you who watched the inauguration of the president, one of the people who you saw up there reading from the Sermon on the Mount, his name is Sammy Rodriguez. Sammy heads a very large constituency nationwide of Hispanic Christian leaders. And I would say that Sammy Rodriguez's statement in response to the Trump administration's action is actually is pretty favorable towards the administration's position. He says, while I have differences of opinion with the Trump administration on how exactly to achieve our shared goal of securing our national borders, we at the NHCLC, that's the Hispanic Leadership Coalition that he is the head of, we've made ourselves available to the Trump administration throughout the process and have made our position clear. He even says that when President Trump builds his wall, we must also, and as passionately, build bridges with the Latino community. He says that they've made it clear that they vigorously oppose any action that would forcibly remove the 11 undocumented people living, working, and raising their families in the United States. And then they list the exceptions to that. I think they totally expect the deportation of those who they describe as criminals, drug dealers, and others who bring shame and pain on our community. He goes on to talk about his gratefulness that he had an opportunity to meet with Donald Trump and Trump's commitment not to oppose DACA. And then he talks about his agreement that Trump needs to secure the border, that it's critically important to ensuring the safety of all Americans. He agrees with the administration that the American people have a right to determine who comes into the country and to demand that our laws are respected in the process. So that's actually a very pro-Trump statement. I don't have another way of saying that. He goes on to say, and this is his walk-off sentence, however, and I think that this is how Christians can speak truth to power. However, our goal and our continued focus, and he describes again the organization that he serves, will be to ensure these policies are always balanced by a respect for the sanctity of all life and the well-being of the immigrant. Okay, so when we start surveying the waterfront of the way that faith leaders are responding, I think that Sammy Rodriguez, his response is very balanced in its approach. Sort of acknowledges the tension that exists in the conversation and seems to have a pretty thorough comprehension of the challenges that the government faces in securing the borders and answering the concern of everyday Americans in terms of vetting those who would enter, but also acknowledging that, you know, this is a life issue, and this is a life issue for all of life, and immigrants need to be treated as people of dignity. Now, there are, let's say, more enthusiastic negative responses out there as well. One of the more enthusiastically negative responses is from some mainline representatives not only of mainline Christianity, but of Reform Judaism and other organizations as well. And I would just say that if you're going to have a press conference where you are going to make a big statement against the administration, you should have more than 10 people there. That's just sort of my personal opinion. So I feel like these folks probably could agenda up, or just don't take a picture. Like, just don't post the picture. Anyway, that's my messaging recommendation. So spearheading this group of Christian, Jewish, and Muslim faith leaders who have joined together to express their opposition to President Trump's executive orders on immigration and refugees. Leading the pack is the Presbyterian Church USA. And the press conference, which features 10 people, was held on the steps of the New York Avenue Presbyterian Church in Washington, D.C. If you read, you know, basically their statements of opposition, nothing in here is going to surprise you if you are familiar with the arguments that are made by those mainline churches and representatives of the Jewish and Muslim communities who would basically say there should basically be open borders. I mean, that's essentially what they're saying. There ought to be no barriers of any kind to entry to the United States. If you read Kimberly Winston's piece, Kimberly Winston writes for the Religion News Service, and she put together what I would describe as like an aggregated piece. It's called Refugee Ban, Border Wall, Religious Leaders Respond. So she's aggregated a lot of responses that are out there, and she's put them together in one place, and I find that very helpful. So you can check out Kimberly Winston's piece at the Religion News Service, and that's just religionnews.com. Now, I will say that there's a sentence in here that I'm not exactly sure, after having read all the responses, that I totally agree with. And the sentence is this: the reaction came mostly from the religious left. I actually disagree with that, and is highly critical of the moves. I disagree with that as well. I think it's actually far more balanced or divided. Balanced is the nice word. Divided is maybe the more honest word. The Christian leaders, or the leaders of faith communities who are quoted in this piece, and who I think, if you just were to scan the waterfront of what's going on out there in terms of the responses, you are going to see that there's a lot of division. There's a lot of division out there among religious leaders in terms of the answer to the question, are these good or are these bad? These executive orders related to immigration and refugees. So, and the reason that I say they don't mostly come from the religious left, if you were to just jump through this article by Kimberly Winston, you're going to see a statement in here by the National Association of Evangelicals, not traditionally understood to be representing the left. Franklin Graham, not understood to be representing the left. The Catholic bishops, definitely not representing the left. Sammy Rodriguez, whose statement I've already read. And the ACLJ, definitely not representing the left. Okay, so now you will find some very extremely liberal organizations represented on here. And I find it particularly curious, and I might have to bring this up with Kimberly, she describes these as reactions of religious leaders. I'm pretty much thinking that the American Humanist Association, if it's going to be described as a religious organization, well, I just think we should have that conversation. I think that's pretty interesting. Have we elevated in our conversation humanism to the level of a religion? And if so, that's important. That's an important conversation for us to have. I do know that it's recognized as a religion by the Supreme Court. So maybe that's what she's going with. All right. So basically, the division comes down to this. If you read what the Bible says, then you know that the refugee and the immigrant are people who are worthy of particular attention and concern. If you're a person who's concerned with public safety, and you are convinced that this extreme vetting needs to happen in order for Americans to be safe, and you view that as the appropriate role of government as God ordained, then your answer to this is different. And so that's really the division that you're going to see when it comes to the perspective of Christians on these issues. And so now I am only exclusively speaking to the question of where Christian leaders come down on this, because I can't really include leaders of the Humanist Association or leaders of these Muslim organizations like CARE I can't include them in this conversation because I'm going to use the New Testament of the Bible. And so I recognize that the only people who see this as the Word of God and recognize its authority are Christians. And so I'm going to just speak to the Christians out there for just a minute and say, it's important that we get together and actually discern the undivided mind of Christ on the matters of the day before we go out and start spouting off about it. Whoever you are, you, all by yourself, or even the one organization that you represent, or even the cluster of 10 organizations that you represent, or I don't even care if you represent 100 organizations or 1,000, you don't represent the full body of Christ in the world. And so to get out there and declare that you are the one person who is speaking on behalf of Christ and that government must bow the knee because of that, first of all, that confuses the issue of church and state. That confuses the issue of church and state. It confuses the issue of who we are as a people in the United States of America who are not governed by the Bible, but we're governed by the Constitution. So you guys know, I mean, I'm the person who's out there constantly saying that religious liberty and religious freedom are only religious liberty and religious freedom if they're equally applied to all. And so if we're going to do extreme vetting for Muslims, fine. We got to do extreme vetting for Christians. We got to do extreme vetting for Jews. We got to do extreme vetting for atheists. We got to do extreme vetting for everybody. Everybody. Let's just do extreme vetting. Let's not say it's just going to be for one group of people. Let's decide what the appropriate level of vetting is, and let's just vet everybody that way. So that's not drawing back what Trump has proposed. That's actually saying let's just make equal application to everybody. Because I think that solves the problem on both sides. And you're going to say to yourself, I mean, for the people who are just stomping mad about the whole thing, they're going to remain stomping mad, and I recognize that, and no rational solution to this is actually going to win an argument with them, so that's fine. That's totally fine. I get that. But when people use hyperbolic language in relationship to what the executive orders actually say, first of all, the list of countries that is on there, okay, it's exactly the same list of countries that are on the State Department's website as state sponsors of terror. This is not a list that, like, Trump and a few other people came up with over cocktails. This is the list of state sponsors of terror. Okay, so if you are from a country that we recognize as a state sponsor of terror, we're basically saying, we're going to look a little more closely at that if you want to come live with us. So that doesn't seem irrational to me. Okay, and then the 120 days. People who use hyperbolic language to refer to that as, I had one of these in one of these statements. This is when I flip through my papers and I think to myself, I should have highlighted everything, but then I highlight everything and I can't remember what specifically I wanted to share with you. So the traumatizes, here's the word, the lengthy delay, which, by the way, 120 days is 4 months. Okay. The lengthy delay imposed in this ban further traumatizes refugees. Okay. I just have to tell you that in a process that already takes 18 to 24 months, 4 months isn't traumatizing anybody. 4 months is not traumatic. All right. The process is already 18 to 24 months long. And we're not necessarily saying that there's going to be 4 months added for the people that are currently in the process. We're just saying that, you know, there's going to be a pause during which there is some review undertaken to determine whether or not the current process is exactly what we want to be doing. They may decide that the current process is exactly what we want to be doing. And in 120 days, it just starts right back up again. It's basically a pause to see if we're doing all that we need to be doing or all that we could be doing or if some changes need to be made in the process. 120 days, to describe that as a lengthy delay that's going to traumatize people, that's just hyperbolic, and that's not helpful. It's not helpful language. So let's know what the executive orders say. Let's understand what they're asking for. Let's be rational. Let's be honest. Let's be people who are only purveyors of the truth. Let's understand the process. The people are being vetted. And then let's be welcoming. And certainly to the immigrants among us, to the refugees among us, the greatest thing that any one of us could possibly be doing to improve the situation is to be hospitable to the people who are already here. 110,000 refugees arrived in the United States of America last year. How many of them do you already know? If you don't know a refugee who arrived last year, you're not doing your part, man. You got to get out there. You got to meet somebody. You got to be intentional. I guarantee you that within driving distance of your house, within the circumference of where you roam around, there is a refugee community or couple or family. How do I know that? Okay, and you're saying, I don't even know how to find somebody like that. Okay, so your local school is a great place to identify folks who are different than you. Public schools are a great place, right? People are accessing public schools. People are accessing public transportation. If you're not accessing public schools or public transportation, get out of your bubble, man. Okay? Go find a grocery store that has a name in a language you don't recognize. Chances are it's immigrant owned and run. Go in, look for something that looks like something that you might recognize, and go ask the person, is this like bread? You know, I mean, just you can start a conversation about anything, people. You might have to get slightly out of your own comfort zone to engage, actually engage with somebody from another culture who happens to already live in your own community or in your own city, certainly within your own state. Make a vacation of it. You know, I got to tell you, to go to Egypt anymore, you don't have to go to Egypt. There are hundreds of Coptic Christian communities now here in the United States. To go to Iraq, you don't have to go to the Middle East. There are Iraqis here in the United States. They have grocery stores. You should go check them out. All right, I mean, just saying, you could march down the list. You could actually do a little international travel right here in the United States this coming summer. That might be an educational tour somebody could put together. Let us know about it at reconnectwithcarmen.com. I will advertise your internal to the United States international travel if you come up with such a plan. I would love to be a provocateur of such a thing. Okay, so quickly, Acts chapter 11, Acts chapter 15. Even the parting of ways between Paul and Barnabas in Acts chapter 15, the reality that over the course of time, the church has met in councils. The church has met to counsel together at the level of leadership to discern the mind of Christ on the particular matter of the day. And then they have brought that to bear on the way they operated together in the world before they made a public declaration of witness to the watching world. Don't get out there ahead of the church with a big capital C, because trust me when I tell you, the mind of Christ is not divided. And so if his people are divided on a subject, we are the ones who are messed up, not Jesus. Okay, well, that's enough preaching on that subject for today. Let's move on. Okay, I don't have time Oh my goodness, I got one clock that says I got 10 minutes, and I got another clock that says I got two. I bet the 2-minute clock is correct. Yikes! 90 seconds! Okay! 12 years ago today, Condoleezza Rice became the U.S. Secretary of State, the highest rank an African-American woman had ever held in the United States cabinet. The president at the time was not a Democrat, but a Republican, George W. Bush. At the inauguration of Donald J. Trump, another milestone was passed. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas became the first African-American justice to swear in a U.S. vice president, again, invited to do so by a Republican. Talk about elevating platforms is one thing. I want you to take note of who is actually doing it. On a similar note, Nikki Haley is now the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. At 45 years old and a woman who is the daughter of first-generation Sikh immigrants from India, Nikki Haley is now the first Indian Sikh to hold a cabinet-level position in the U.S. presidential administration. And by the way, not for a Democrat, for a Republican. Hey, you're going to have to check out the Doomsday Clock all by yourself. I'm just going to tell you it's 30 clicks closer to going off. The next time somebody calls a Christian crazy for saying that the end is near, look at what the scientists are saying about the Doomsday Clock today. Hey, this is The Reconnect. We'll see you right back here tomorrow. Have a great day. God bless.
The Reconnect is brought to you by the Presbyterian Lay Committee. To continue the conversation and become part of the Reconnect community, visit reconnectwithcarmen.com.